Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're strapping in for, well, one of the most tragic, sprawling, and frankly pretty disturbing deep dives we've ever attempted. This is a story that kicks off on the, pristine green of the professional gridiron, and somehow it manages to end up deep in the shadows of Midwestern true crime and some really dark urban folklore.
Yeah, it's quite the journey.
We are charting the rise and the truly spectacular fall of Moby Dickman.
And for this, we've drawn on a really fascinating and sometimes conflicting stack of sources. On one hand, you've got the very rigid historical documents. They detail this phenomenal record-breaking athlete. But then, set right against that, you have these hazy, frankly terrifying tabloid-style reports. And those chart his equally spectacular and just incredibly dark decline.
Right.
So our mission today really is to move beyond just the simple biography. We need to understand precisely how that kind of monumental, almost godlike fame can curdle into a very specific kind of folklore, how it transforms a man into a distinct archetype, the urban monster.
Because the sheer scale of his initial achievement, it's absolutely necessary context, isn't it? For the scale of the horrific fall later on, that contrast is really the engine driving this whole myth.
Exactly.
We found this initial quote that just sums up the duality perfectly. He was the greatest quarterback of his era, but off the field, he became legend for all the wrong reasons. I mean, that sets the stage perfectly. It defines the whole transition we have to follow.
Absolutely. We're basically watching an archetype transition unfold in, well, almost real time through these sources. Moby Dickman starts as the unbeatable athlete, the personification of American strength, success.
Golden boy.
Precisely. Then he moves into this really painful, isolating territory of the exile after the disgrace. And then finally, he transforms completely into this urban monster of tall tales and nightmares.
Wow.
So we have to treat the structural guideposts, the legend versus the fact, as our constant roadmap, because they start to diverge, I mean, violently diverge, around 1963.
And the facts of those early years, the foundation for the legend, they're just undeniable. This wasn't some talent scout's gamble, This was pure, unrelenting dominance.
Yeah.
Moby Dickman absolutely crushed college football throughout the late 1950s. The verifiable numbers, the actual stats, show he won nearly every single major college award available. We're talking the most prestigious ones of the era. He was a consensus choice for greatness, no
Yeah.
question.
And that kind of domination, that level of early success, it really writes a career trajectory, not just for a player, but for a kind of, well, a football deity almost.
Right.
He was drafted first overall, and that's a concrete stat that immediately positions him as, destined for huge cultural significance.
Definitely.
But this pre-written prophecy of success,
Yeah.
that's actually what made his downfall so catastrophic later on.
Yeah.
That level of expectation, that achievement, it leaves absolutely zero room for the messy realities of human error, or even just accidental tragedy. It basically ensures that when the fall came, the public would just rewrite his story into something far simpler, maybe more satisfying for them. A moral, a spiritual failure.
So we really need to spend some time establishing that pedestal before we watch it completely shatter, because the height of that platform, it really determines the severity of the drop, doesn't it?
It does.
So let's look at those golden years first.
Let's look at the myth of that golden era.
The league back then, late 50s, early 60s, it was hungry for these larger-than-life figures. And Moby Dickman, well, he immediately delivered on his
Oh,
promise.
absolutely.
He was the definition of physical, just relentless dominance. He took that raw enthusiasm and that sheer, almost frightening physical power from college and brought it straight into the professional arena. No adjustment period needed.
Right.
And his pro career lasted a solid 15 years. That tenure alone speaks volumes about his longevity, his consistent excellence.
And that success, it wasn't just measured in game scores, was it? It was really defined by the persona he cultivated. He built this image of like raw obsession, punishing training regimes, unbelievable strength.
Yeah.
The sources consistently describe him as the greatest. They use phrases like unmovable object or force of nature,
He's hip.
which speaks not just to his talent, but to that whole self-fulfilling myth that was built up around him.
And crucially, that long 15-year career included three championships, three titles. That's a
Yeah.
concrete stat that permanently places him among that tiny handful of elite athletes who really defined their generation.
No doubt.
He truly achieved everything possible in the game at that point. You can just picture it, right? That vivid image, him standing on his teammate's shoulders, sweat-soaked, holding that final championship trophy. Just roaring victory to the massive crowds, he was, for all intents and purposes, untouchable.
And that sustained, celebrated success,
yeah,
it's absolutely vital to the psychological transformation that followed.
Yeah.
It provided that necessary, almost brutal contrast later on. This prolonged adoration, this public dependency on his success, it made his public persona so massive, so cemented in the idea of pure athletic perfection, that when the inevitable crash came, the cultural noise was just exponentially louder.
Yeah.
His greatness, you know, looking back,
yeah,
it was actually the source of his vulnerability.
And this is where we start to integrate that core insight you mentioned earlier, his initial treasure, his talent, his fame, his massive size. It became the trap.
Exactly.
The bigger the hero, the more monstrous the villain has to be to explain the fall. And Moby Dickman's success provided all the raw material needed for his own later mythological construction.
It's precisely the contrast that mythmakers crave. It's perfect for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because he set the bar for physical prowess and even maybe moral fortitude so incredibly high.
Yeah.
When that prowess tragically resulted in a massive harm, the public consciousness could only interpret it as an expression of, like, deep moral decay.
Wow.
He transitioned from being the best man on the field to, effectively, the worst man off it, all based on a single horrifying moment.
Which brings us right to that precise, terrible turning point, October 1963.
Yeah.
This is the moment where the records stop being just pure sports history and they start bleeding into dark legend and, well, precursors to true crime stories.
Mm-hmm.
Moby Dickman was attempting a pretty standard play, but his approach was typical of his aggressive, overpowering style.
And the sources are extremely specific about the nature of this event, which somehow grounds the horror in a really mundane situation. It happened during a common routine play call, a quarterback sneak. Short yardage situation.
Right, something you see all the time.
Exactly. But Moby's execution was anything but standard. The play was described in the sources we have as Moby attempting to literally drive over the defenders, like treating the opposing line less like human opponents and more like a physical wall to be smashed through by sheer unstoppable force and weight.
And the tragic result. This is what cemented his immediate downfall, his instantaneous entry into folklore. Now, we have to tread carefully here because the story immediately becomes legendary.
Right.
But the reports say that the catastrophic pileup resulted in 7 players losing their lives after being crushed by the weight of Moby.
7 players.
7. We absolutely have to emphasize this is how the legend is reported in these sources. We're tracking the narrative here, not necessarily verifying the, you know, judicial facts line by line.
It's that instant terrifying transformation from star athlete to, well, an engine of utter destruction. The very physical force that had been celebrated for 15 years suddenly became lethal. In an instant.
You can almost hear the crowd's enthusiasm just turning to disbelief and then absolute horror. Let's try and integrate that bizarre moment with that pattern breaker, the mock commentary, just to reflect the shock the audience must have felt.
All right.
Simulating excited, high-pitched commentary voice, Dickman takes the snap. He's diving into the pile. He's trying to drive through the center of the line. He's pushing, driving. Wait.
Simulating stunned, immediate silence. Oh, dear God. The pile. Mm. It's not moving. The whistle is blown. Officials are swarming the field now. We have complete agonizing silence on the field. Something terrible has happened here.
The immediate consequence was just devastating and absolute. He was summarily banished from the league instantly, resulting in total public disgrace.
Total.
Moby Dickman's name was effectively erased from the professional records. It forced his immediate retirement and basically deletion from the history books.
And this act of official institutional erasure, it's absolutely critical to understanding the mechanism of myth-making here.
How so?
Well, once the official records freeze, once the league essentially pretends he never existed, the legend is completely free. It can move, it can evolve, it can grow monstrous. This banishment connects directly to that archetype of the exile. We've seen this before. Like Klaus Richter, the soldier whose military records were also deleted. Moby Dickman's official deletion from the league. It becomes the very evidence of his story, creates this massive, painful gap in history that the public desperately needed to fill with some kind of monstrous explanation.
And here's where we need to hit that necessary pattern breaker, the cold fact integration, just to ground the story in reality before it fully ascends into myth.
Right.
While the legend describes him as this almost supernatural giant whose crushing power was synonymous with his pure evil status, the reality is that Moby Dickman, while certainly large for a quarterback, was still a human being.
Yeah, an athlete, but human.
This is the media and the public imagination transforming a physical attribute, his size, his dominant playstyle, into a moral indictment.
Exactly.
His weight was real, but the scale of the destruction reported elevated his size into something supernatural in the story, a manifestation of inherent evil in the public eye.
And the implication is profoundly dark, isn't it? The physical enormity of the player, coupled with that horrific event, it was interpreted by the collective imagination as evidence of some internal spiritual corruption that had just been lurking there all along.
Waiting to get out.
Precisely. It creates that vivid image of sudden absolute silence after the catastrophic pileup, where the only thing left standing is the legend of Moby's unstoppable destructive force, which is now deemed inherently evil by the world he once dominated.
So Moby Dickman, the triple champion, the first overall pick,
yeah,
vanished, gone. The man simply disappeared from the sports headlines.
Poof.
The sports world collectively kind of exhaled and quickly tried to move on, treated the whole event like an organizational bad dream.
Swept under the rug.
But the story of the man himself, the actual Moby Dickman, his story had only just begun its decade-long descent into obscurity and, frankly, the absurd.
Because his celebrity was just too large, too potent, to simply vanish and dissolve into normalcy. It needed a new stage. And often the cruelest stage possible is found in deep, humiliating obscurity.
So where does a disgraced legendary athlete go to be forgotten? We trace Moby Dickman's life after the banishment, and we have to skip over about a decade of silence where the sources offer little more than rumor. Just whisper.
Yeah, a big gap.
This period of complete isolating obscurity lasted until his eventual and truly bizarre resurfacing in the mid-1970s.
And the historical detail of how he resurfaced?
Yeah.
It's utterly shocking, especially considering his former stature, his wealth.
What do the sources say?
Our sources confirm that by the mid-1970s, he was completely broke and earning a living in possibly the most humiliating way imaginable for a former superstar, working as a party clown in rural Indiana.
A party clown? Seriously?
Yes. Traveling around performing for children's birthdays.
Wow. From the commanding quarterback leading the league, signing million-dollar contracts, idol of millions, to this, it's the ultimate excruciating fall from grace.
It really is.
That juxtaposition. Mm-hmm. The champion who commanded millions of fans now performing cheap birthday tricks for minimum wage. It's not just ironic. It's essential to that mythological shift we're tracking.
Symbolically, the clown is actually the perfect disguise for the exiled monster.
How so?
Well, it combines absurdity, this forced cheerfulness, and total concealment. We've analyzed this concept before, connecting it to the idea of the false front, like in the story of Aladdin or Adil al-Din, who uses a false identity to hide his true nature or his shame.
Ah, okay.
The clown mask becomes a voluntary, painful erasure of the self. The disgraced hero uses the makeup, the costume, to hide the face that the entire world now recognizes and condemns.
But I have to ask, you know, maybe speaking for the listener here, I get the symbolic humiliation of the broke clown, but how did the public perception make that leap? From this really pathetic figure, a broke former athlete doing minimum wage work, to a genuine urban monster, a calculating killer.
That's the critical failure of the concealment, you see. The mask was intended as a defense mechanism, perhaps, but it became a visual trigger for the public's existing fear and judgment of him. By 1977, the rumors started matching up with real disturbing incidents. Reports began circulating of dozens of people going missing, specifically at remote rest stops and truck plazas across the Midwest.
Okay, wow. And this is precisely where the monster officially escapes the confines of just sports folklore and enters the realm of actual true crime. It gives the myth a horrifying real-world tether.
Exactly.
That concrete stat of dozens of people missing in a specific contained geographical area that immediately created a high-stakes, terrifying crisis.
And the link was immediate and visceral, because witnesses started providing consistent reports of a giant clown sighted near the scenes of the disappearances.
A giant clown.
A giant clown. His public projection of monstrous status, which really began with the 1963 tragedy, it found its perfect, terrifying manifestation in these true crime stories. His former celebrity, now amplified by the inherent terror of the clown figure, became a tool of fear itself.
The public already believed, didn't they? Thanks to the 1963 tragedy, they believed he possessed this innate, destructive, pure evil. Now, in exile, hidden by the mask of the clown, that belief was just gruesomely confirmed in their minds.
Right.
The narrative had found its final terrifying form. The celebrated sports hero was dead, completely replaced by the figure of the giant menacing clown, standing silently in the shadows of a rural Midwest rest stop. That is a truly vivid, chilling image.
And that image proved powerful enough and frightening enough to force an official response. Authorities quickly connected the dots. They recognized the pattern of the rest stop vanishings, the unique description of the suspect, even with the incredible mythology already swirling around him.
The situation was just too widespread, too high profile to ignore any longer. Authorities launched this massive, coordinated, giant sting operation, specifically designed to try and catch the individual they now strongly suspected was Moby Dickman.
Yeah.
And the sources, they paint this as a really protracted and dangerous operation, not just a simple traffic stop or anything like that.
No, this investigation was intense. It was dangerous and incredibly costly. Our sources note that in the attempt to detain the suspect, several officers lost their lives in the process.
Wow. Several officers.
Yeah. This detail immediately underscores the difficulty, the almost superhuman struggle authorities faced in trying to capture this individual. It further cements his legendary status as this incredibly destructive, unstoppable force, even completely outside the context of the football field.
And the eventual arrest the day they finally cornered him, this is the definitive signal, isn't it? That the narrative has completely left verifiable history behind and fully transitioned into folklore, into the realm of the tall tale.
Absolutely.
So sources state that the authorities finally cornered Moby Dickman on the impossible, completely nonsensical date of February 30th, 1978.
February 30th. That impossible day is what we sometimes call the guardrail reminder.
Okay.
It's basically the narrator, the collective public consciousness kind of winking at you, the listener. It signals that we are no longer dealing with simple police reports or verifiable chronology. Not anymore.
Right.
We are now firmly in the territory of a campfire story, where the factual truth is far less important than the narrative satisfaction. The date itself tells you the event is legendary.
But the arrest itself, even within the legend, was described as this monumental physical struggle. It reinforces that urban monster archetype.
Mm-hmm.
The authorities reportedly cornered him in a single cramped location, a small bathroom facility at a rest stop. And the ensuing confrontation was described as a three-hour scuffle before he was finally detained.
3 hours.
3 hours. Before being sentenced to life in prison.
That three-hour fight in such an enclosed space.
Yeah.
It just confirms his almost superhuman resilience and destructive power in the public mind. It creates that visceral, vivid image. The tense, violent, multi-hour standoff in that claustrophobic bathroom with multiple officers desperately wrestling this giant clown figure into submission.
Yeah.
That prolonged struggle ensures that even in captivity, he remains a giant in the story.
So he was sentenced to life in prison. But even the walls of a maximum security correctional facility couldn't contain Moby Dickman's active role in the public imagination.
No chance.
We have to transition now to the final and maybe the most utterly ludicrous myth surrounding him, his escape and death.
Right. Just a few short years into his sentence, the ultimate bizarre rumor of his death emerged. He supposedly lost his life attempting to escape the maximum security prison.
Okay, escape attempts happen.
But he didn't use a tunnel or a bribe, or overpower a guard. No.
Mm-hmm.
Story goes, he tried to escape on a glider that he made entirely out of newspapers.
A paper glider. Get out of here.
Newspapers.
I mean, that is the ultimate metaphor, isn't it? For impossible ambition and just pure desperate madness.
It is.
This incredibly low-tech escape attempt using utterly mundane, fragile materials for an impossible feat of engineering. It perfectly fits that DIY tech archetype we've seen.
Precisely. It really echoes the story of Russell Kearney, you know, the famous aviator whose single-minded devotion to impossible flight defined him. Or even in a pop culture sense, Buzz Lightyear, the explorer whose artifacts outlive their makers.
Right.
Moby Dickman, using a fragile paper glider, was symbolically chasing infinity. He was attempting the ultimate impossible escape from the crushing weight of his own infamy, his physical reality. The paper glider became his final fragile artifact.
So even in death, Moby Dickman remained this active character in the public mind, eternally pursuing some form of ultimate impossible freedom.
Yeah.
The paper glider, just a symbol of his desperate creativity and sheer madness. It became the last object associated with his life. Infamous Moby Dickman is dead, as the sources confirm. But the story ensures he is never truly gone.
And this whole sprawling narrative, it's just an incredible synthesis of celebrity downfall, isn't it?
Yeah.
We started with the dominant quarterback of his era, maybe the best ever.
Mm-hmm.
And now we end with a prison escape story involving paper wings.
It's unbelievable.
It encapsulates the full breadth of the American appetite for both hero worship and the subsequent almost gleeful villainization.
What's fascinating here, looking back, is how Moby Dickman became the physical embodiment of that process we call fame curdled into folklore. His early treasure, his size, his championships, his undeniable physical success, it turned into the very trap that ultimately destroyed him, or at least destroyed his reputation in life.
Yeah.
This mirrors that deeper insight we found in the story of Aladdin, remember?
Yeah.
Where the treasure is always subtly rigged to be a trap. It leads him into exile, leads to his eventual downfall.
And the mechanism of his erasure is just so key to the entire phenomenon. His total banishment in 1963 meant his official records froze.
Right.
Completely.
Right. The League could just pretend he never existed.
Exactly. But his legendary life, his story as the exiled, terrifying killer clown that kept moving, kept evolving in the public mind, filling the vacuum.
Exactly. And that connects right back to that concept of real Wendy we discussed before, where official, verifiable records can freeze solid, while the real messy lives, and importantly, the legends of individuals, keep moving, keep changing in the public sphere.
Mm-hmm.
Because Moby Dickman was officially erased, the real man became secondary, almost irrelevant to the ongoing story.
Yeah, the story took over.
And the public filled that void with the most monstrous, yet somehow narratively complete figure possible.
And his greatness made his monstrosity possible in a twisted way. His championship level of obsession, that drive which once won him games, it was repurposed by the public imagination into the motivation for murder.
It's chilling. Let's just review that painful, almost logical progression for the listener one more time. We saw Moby Dickman go from the dominant quarterback of his era,
peak of his profession,
to sudden, absolute public disgrace after 1963. He then collapsed into the profound humiliation of the broke clown performing at birthday parties for cash.
The lowest point.
From that humiliating low, he somehow graduated in the public mind into the terrifying urban monster, reportedly responsible for dozens of vanishings. And finally, he achieved status as an impossible legend through that ludicrous paper glider escape attempt.
It's quite a trajectory.
The media certainly tried, you know, to dissect the scandal, analyze the specific tragedy of the 1963 play.
Sure, there were attempts at factual reporting.
But the public, ultimately, they preferred the resulting caricature, the giant terrifying clown. Why?
Well, because the caricature provided a clear, easily identifiable monster. It could conveniently explain all the tragedy, all the fear, all the shame that followed his career.
It's simpler that way.
Much simpler. The facts were messy, complex, maybe even ambiguous in parts.
Mm.
But the myth was satisfyingly terrifying and provided a perfect, albeit brutal, moral lesson.
So what does this all mean for us, for you, the audience, looking back at a story that just defies belief at almost every turn?
Mm.
Well, I think it shows us how terrifyingly easy it is for overwhelming achievement to be instantaneously overwritten by infamy.
Yeah.
The sheer weight of his initial fame ensured that the moment he faltered, the gaps in the information, that decade of silence, the impossible arrest date, they were immediately and aggressively filled by myth. Nature abhors a vacuum, right?
And the system that created him, the League that celebrated him practically as a deity, they were only too eager to banish him, delete him completely when things went wrong. But the crowd, they kept cheering and whispering his name long after he'd stopped playing.
Why?
Because they never really knew how the game actually ended, did they?
Yeah.
They only knew the story that followed, the legend.
His story remains this kind of ghost in the annals of sports history. A really powerful reminder that the narratives we create about our heroes, they're often far more important and definitely far more lasting than the heroes themselves.
The cracked helmet lying discarded in the stadium tunnel never earned a verdict.